The Football Pod.
Who are you blaming, yourself or the man?
Blame names, Paddy. This is the time. This is the chance.
It's a black book and say,
The Football Pod. Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the Ball Rugby.
Now it's time for us to have a look ahead to the start of the Guinness Women's Six Nations this weekend. Ireland are going to be in Le Mans to take on France. Ireland hoping to bounce back from the disappointment of last year where they finished bottom of the table, but already lofty goals. Scott Beaman, their head coach, has said they want to qualify for the World Cup, potentially through the Six Nations with a top three finish. They do have three home games coming up over the next month or so. I'm delighted to say that Molly Scuffle-McCabe is here with me. Molly, how are you getting on?
I'm good, thank you for having me.
This is an interesting, I suppose, new departure for the team. I mentioned Scott Beaman has been speaking about the goals, and he's been in place now since last summer. You had to play in the third tier of the WXV, which is not where you would have wanted to be, but you cleaned out the games in that competition. There's been the representative sides over the last few months, and you've had a few camps getting ready for the start of the Six Nations this weekend as well. So it seems it's kind of been a positive new leaf for the team.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's definitely been a nice, I suppose, change in terms of our culture, you know, as well. Like, I think that we wanted to touch on opening up a new culture as a team, and look, name it what it was, like, that Six Nations is not the way we wanted anything to go. We don't want to have those type of performances. We want to be pushing, and as you say, yeah, we want to be qualifying for World Cup, so that'll definitely be the aim. Scott's been very, like, sorry, I'm stumbling across my words there. Scott's been very, very a key part of, I think, the journey that we're going to be on.
Mm-hmm. Sean Ryan seems to be a fairly key part to this as well, having come in. And Dorothy Wall was telling us earlier in the week that it was player-driven, that you wanted to get someone in to look at the culture around things and to look at how maybe the performances could be improved, but having a look at that cultural side around the group. So that's something obviously you must have sat down and had conversations about after last year.
Yeah, I think so. I think maybe it wasn't even so much as openly named. I think there was just a feeling that that's as a group where we wanted to go. One of the big touch points was that we had values within our squad that were nearly unspoken about. And I think one of the things that Sean managed to do was name our values and create a performance map around what those values were, and then bring on-field, off-field standards around that. It's really helped with, I think, naming what we want to do rather than it being a general feeling.
Mm, kind of setting those goals out as well of what you want to achieve along the way as a group, I'm assuming.
Exactly, yeah. He's brought in a model of, he calls it shared ownership. So the idea being that if you all have your say along the way, it's something that you can genuinely buy into. Do you know, everybody feels, I would like to say, everybody feels as though they've been able to input into what we're doing. We all sat down, we all decided on that performance map ourselves. It's been player driven. He's just facilitated us in getting it actually down into paper, and then having, I suppose, clear, concise goals on how we want to do it and what we want to do along the way to achieving those things, what we want people to see from us and what we want to know as well about ourselves.
There's, I suppose, three groups at the moment that are in there. You've got the sevens players who are contracted through the sevens, you've got players who are contracted for 15s, and some players who are still doing this on a part-time basis and juggling a job at the moment too.
Yep.
I know you were talking last year about professionalism as well and maybe the difference that it's made. You were working was it a veterinary receptionist at
yep.
the time? So you would have had the normal, mightn't have been 9 to 5, I think it was 11 to 7 you were working.
Yeah,
at the time.
Good memory.
That's
yeah.
quite a balance to try and work out. So I'm guessing this has been a game changer for you, where you're not having to juggle that with playing to be able to actually concentrate in the preparation full time.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think when you name the three groups, that definitely was the feeling that we want to get away from, is that there are three groups, but in our performance with inside the group, there's a player performance group. And the idea is that you have representation from each of those three groups to eventually get it to the stage where we're actually just one group. And that when we come together, there's no barriers between centralised, non-centralised and sevens. I actually have since moved to New Zealand. I'm not professional anymore. I've actually picked up I've started pre-selection for veterinary.
Okay.
So I'm going back to try and become a veterinary surgeon. I'm actually studying Massey University in New Zealand. So it's been interesting. I'm one of the ones who is doing a bit of juggling at the moment. Been facilitated very well to do that. But yeah, it's, I think when you say three groups straight away, I'm thinking, yeah, we want to be one group.
Put those walls down as quickly as possible.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, I don't think there's a need for it. Do you know, I don't think we don't view ourselves that way. We don't look at each other and, you know, I don't look at Eve Bay or Aveen or whoever comes in and say, oh, they're sevens girls. They're our teammates, do you know?
They also bring ridiculous levels of quality
yes.
into the team too. Because
yeah.
I know Scott's been talking about this, that maybe there might have to be some balance because there will be a round of sevens coming up next month yep. while the tournament is on. And this has been a kind of a long-standing debate. But you want to have players of that quality on the pitch, don't you?
I mean, they're going to be Olympians. Like that I feel like that gets maybe glossed over in the... I understand where people come from when they're speaking about it and it's a talking point, but these girls are going to be Olympians. And I can tell you for sure, it was hard fought. Like, they are people who, as a squad, especially because we have some younger players in the squad, who can take inspiration. I mean, I was in sevens for 3 years from just after 2016. I saw the defeat of not getting into Rio, what it caused for those girls. And some of those girls are still there and have fought from... literally fought. I think that's true resilience to get up to now qualified for an Olympics, and they're going to be Olympians. And if that's not inspiring for your own teammates to have that journey, then I don't know what is.
Mm. The journey you make to New Zealand then, tell us about this, because I presume you're making the decision to go finish your studies literally on the other side of the world. Did your international future come into mind when you were thinking about that?
Yeah, for sure. I'll be quite honest and say I didn't know if I was going to be able to have an international career. I probably at the time didn't think it was going to be able to continue, but I had reached that point where it's the next degree that I wanted to do. And by putting an age on myself, I was kind of going, I need to get cracking with it. And it was probably a bit naive of me at the time to think I had to get pushing on it. I definitely am keen to get it started, but I think I just reached a point where I felt as though I knew I had an opportunity to do it in New Zealand. And it was probably the more likely opportunity. I found that Massey were quite helpful, quite open, and I mean as well the other side of it was, I was like, well, I'm going to New Zealand, where else can you play rugby? And the other options were Poland, Budapest, and I was kind of going, well, either way I'm probably going to be playing potentially a lower standard rugby if I can even find a rugby club. So I was kind of like, well, if I have to pick one, you know, why not go to New Zealand where I'll be playing a good standard of rugby anyway and I'll be enjoying it. And I had accepted it, but it was interesting. Yeah, the RFU gave me the opportunity to stay involved, which I am very grateful for, because I didn't know at the time when I was making those decisions, and you're not having those conversations. I had just made that decision in my head that, okay, unfortunately, maybe one has to take over for the other. And look, that's the place where I'm at in my life. And thankfully, I've been able to balance doing both. So.
And while the studies are obviously the main focus and probably the job opportunity on the far end of it, this is a chance to learn from a different rugby culture as well. I was thinking of some of the girls that went to play in South Africa for a club for a little bit of a spell over the last while as well. This is probably a chance to learn, I won't say a different way of playing rugby, but a different rugby culture.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think it's funny when you say focus, I suppose my focus probably shifts slightly in terms of this is now the focus. The studies definitely don't take a backseat, but it's interesting, they kind of release one another. Coming off the pitch and trying to sit down to study in the evening sometimes is very challenging, but actually I'm trying to frame it that it's a release from one to the other. So if I want a release from study, I go and play my rugby, you know, and I get stuck into that, and I'm switched on from 8 in the morning until 6 p.m. at night or whenever our training is scheduled, that's it. But yeah, definitely it's been interesting to play in New Zealand. I got a very short end of the last season there. Just with the seasons changing, our Six Nations runs through Super Rugby Apiki. So I haven't had a chance to be involved in that at all, but I see that they're going on at the moment, and it's the club structure is very interesting. I played for Christchurch RFC, very welcoming bunch, very laid back, lovely people, like so easy going. Steph Fox actually took me in over there. It was really good to me, got me involved in the club, and yeah, it's been different. It's been interesting.
No issues when you turn and go, yeah, I'll be away for a couple of months now.
They were very open. I mean, I'm actually, because of college, I had to move out of Christchurch and move up to Palmerston North. So I was pretty open about that from the get-go, that that was the plan. And they kind of were like, yep, kick on. So I actually did pre-season with Christchurch, even though they knew I wasn't going to be with them for the season. So they're just really kind people, do you know, and they're just, they can see what, they have Black Ferns from their club. So I think they kind of respect that. You have to do what you have to do, and there was no snobbery by any means about, you know, training with them when I wasn't going to be with them. They're very happy and they wish me well, and yeah, it was nice.
Am I right in saying you don't mind a little bit of a change and shift in life as well? Because you say sevens into 15s. I think, did you do law before you did veterinary studies as
yeah.
well? Yeah, kind of two different ideas, really.
Yeah, oh, very different. I think my original goal would have definitely to have done veterinary. Okay. I would have loved to have done veterinary from a young age, but I think with the leave insert and you know, you make the decision to do those subjects when you're 16. Mm. And I remember my self-talk at that time wasn't very positive. I didn't think it was realistic. It wasn't negative, but it was realistic. And I don't think I would have gotten the points to get into veterinary at the time. So I went, right, well, what's my next best thing? That's law. I'm definitely interested in it. And by all means, I could have probably worked in a legal job for years and enjoyed it. Mm. I just don't know if I would have loved it. And that was my marker. Was I was working in A&L at the time, and I had a couple of friends who were on trying to get onto the training contracts, and I don't know, I just saw that they had the motivation to want to get onto the next chapter in law and go and do Blackhall or go and do King's Inns. And I could just see, I was looking at them and thinking, why am I resistant to doing the FE1s? Why am I sitting here kind of going, oh, not this time round, maybe next time.
You know when it comes to this.
Exactly. And I think that was it. And I actually had a conversation with a previous coach, which probably spurred it on. And he kind of, why are you doing something that doesn't bring you the love? And I, yeah, fair enough, actually. And I realised I'm at an age where you do get to make that decision. Mm. I think unfortunately, a lot of people get caught in careers that they maybe don't love. But by that time, they maybe have commitments, like financial commitments, family commitments that maybe don't allow them to. And I think the people who do actually change their mind when they're in that sort of circumstance where they're fully committed to something is, I think they're the bravest, because it's not easy. I mean, I had no big commitments and I changed my mind. So I can imagine how daunting it is for people who do.
Tell us about taking up rugby then, because Fiona Coughlin is right there,
yeah,
around our shoulder at the moment with the slam winning team. I've got, yeah, the photo there. So Fiona was your teacher in school.
Yeah, she was my maths and PE teacher.
Not a bad PE teacher to have.
No, she gave me a B in PE actually.
Oh,
in my junior cert.
I never revised that.
Yeah, in my mocks, I never let her hold it down. I went, what's going on? And she's like, oh, I can't remember the feedback she gave me at the time anyway, but I was horrified. I was like, I'm probably one of the only ones that treats it like the Olympics. That probably was the problem. Mm. She wanted me to be a little bit more, maybe team orientated rather than taking it all on myself. But yeah, I was raging. But she definitely got me involved for starts. I wanted to play every sport in school. I think any of the teachers who I had at that time would know that I was out at some different sport every day of the week missing. I remember my French teacher pulled me up on it and was like, Molly can't be out all the time. And I was like, well, I'm playing soccer this week. I was a terrible Ga player, played goals for Ga because I was that poor at it, but I was out doing it.
Look, maybe this was the way you learned how to play fullback. You were watching the pitch.
Yeah, well, debatable. but yeah, so she definitely started me off. I didn't know, I remember when she said she was the captain of the Irish women's team, I had no idea what that entailed. So that was a piece of curiosity for me, I suppose, hearing her speak. And I remember at the time, our maths class used to get off topic, and I think that sometimes it was like, keep her off maths for as long as you can and keep her talking about
get her to talk about winning the slam.
Yeah. So she, I by that stage I was definitely invested in their journey, and I remember watching that game. I remember watching Claire Malloy, I think it was near what looked hypothermia in that match. But yeah, she definitely started me off. And then what happened was Westmanstown RFC came up, Eddie Fallon and Lorna O'Connor came up to our school and ran after school training. And I would say that Fiona Coughlin definitely started me off, but they kept me going.
Yeah.
They gave me somewhere to progress what I was doing, because school at the time, you had blitzes, but you know, it was a one-off blitz and it just wasn't what it was. I think it's definitely grown now. I see full schools teams actually taking part in, you know, proper matches week to week, and it seems to be definitely getting better. But at the time it was one blitz, and unfortunately sometimes it was turn to tag, you know, whatever the situation may be, teams didn't have the numbers or whatever. But I would say Eddie and Lorna definitely kept me going. Two forwards from their respective women's and men's team in Westmanstown, both forwards, which we used to crack up. We were like, what did you do to produce in a scrum half? But yeah, they definitely kept me going in it.
I guess the sport was in its infancy at the time, and hockey was your draw mainly, was it?
Yeah, I was playing. I was playing senior hockey. I think I could go. I think you could turn senior at the time at 15. I don't know if that's still the same rule, but I was playing with Weston in Lucan. Had a great group of women around me there. Really, really good. Really loved training, and I think the way I describe it is I was a starred seconds player, so I could play down a division and up a division at the time. So I had roughly three hockey games a weekend. But I had rugby in amongst it, so it was actually, I used to cycle from Weston down to Westmanstown and maybe back up to Weston, or get in a car, get one of the girls, the women, to collect me and bring me on to the next hockey match. But slowly but surely, I started prioritising a full game of rugby over a half of hockey. Or it used to be that I'd play a full game of hockey and catch the second half of rugby.
Why was rugby winning your heart then?
I honestly don't know. And I've reflected on that question so much. I don't know what drew me in. I definitely enjoyed it. I was probably better at rugby than hockey. Maybe that was it. Maybe there's an element of it I felt that I was achieving more in it. I think objectively, I don't know if people would agree with that, but I think the sport, I remember Fiona Coughlin told me, if they run by me, like, if they get out of reach where I can't tackle them, I'm able to hold them by the jersey to then pull myself in and tackle them. She's like, yeah, well, as long as you hit them below the neck, you're good. Like, you know, there's no, I don't understand what you, but for all the sports I played, or hockey's not in contact, and you know, all the sports that I played, there's no jersey pulling and everything. So I think there was just an element of you were let loose. Rugby felt like maybe, I don't know, that element of you're let loose rather than, I mean, hockey, I've had multiple ends of a stick in my ribs. You know, it's non-contact, but there's people manage to pull it off.
The dark arts.
Yeah, the dark arts, exactly. I don't see so much of that in rugby anymore, but definitely think maybe it was the looseness of rugby, just go and run and see who can take you down rather than...
It's a familiar story as well, kind of learning skills in one sport and then being transferable. Mm. It's changed a little bit now when you look at the younger members of your squad, and there's 12 uncapped around the group currently, but yep. Some of them are now first generation who've come through rugby as their main sport. There's a lot of players who would have, I guess, who are a little bit older, would have played a different sport. I was thinking, before we come on, I was thinking about Ian McCarrie, who was doing athletics before she decided to run on the wing, and now she's a forward. So there's diversity for
she
you.
She still has the pace of a winger, let
she
me tell
does.
You.
Yeah. Ailsa Hughes played intercounty camogie before she went to play. There's so many. Hannah Tyrrell went into rugby, having played ladies football at a very high level.
Yep.
But the story's kind of changing a bit now, where you talk to some of the people who literally have been, I guess, grown up through the full rugby. They basically had their rugby career panned out from a very young age. It's different to maybe those who were transferring sports in their late teens.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's more visible now as well. You know, I would like to think that as a young girl, there, you see a rugby club and you see a rugby team, whereas I don't know that I knew they existed. I had always played hockey, so maybe that's an unfair statement in that I had always seen the hockey team. But I feel like you knew about football. Like, I remember I went and tried out football. I tried out Guy and Luke and Sarsfields. And I, at the time, just didn't take to those sports. I don't know what it was. I kept hopping the ball twice rather than soloing it. I just couldn't get my head around the coordination of it. But I think now there's just that ability to, you see a rugby team. And I'd like to think eventually young girls have, they don't just say, oh, there's, you know, hockey, camogie, football, Gaelic football. It's actually there's a wide range of sports that they can choose from, and rugby is one of them. Some of those girls are playing rugby so long, which is I would love to actually. You've just sparked my interest in asking them. I wonder what their combined age of playing versus when we started playing. Like, because I know a lot of the Grand Slam team, I'd say, were late transfers. I know Fiona Coughlin was in college. I think she said to me before she picked it up. I remember Sophie Spence at the time, I think, said she was in college as well. So
I think Nicola Friday, your former captain, in exactly the same position. I think she was hockey, then went to school in Kilkenny and took up a rugby.
Okay, I didn't even know that. There you go. So, like, that's just so interesting to me that we all transferred later, I think because it wasn't maybe as visible.
Yeah.
I would think, but I'd be...
I think it definitely feels like different times now at this stage. I think probably, those opportunities are there, and the Trailblazers, like those squad, have made that possible to actually
That's it. That made the news. And I don't know that it did ever before. Do you know, I remember that gained a lot of momentum, and then beating...
The All Blacks game was...
Beating New Zealand, 17-14 or something. Yeah. But that was a huge one. That Ali Miller try in the corner was... That created the momentum for people to look. And realise, oh, hang on, that's a thing. You can get to national level in that. I think the other side of it is Tricky spoke to me about it actually not too long ago and just said, you know, if you're playing county, it's such a privilege and everything, but there's a chance to represent nationally in rugby. And maybe that's the draw as well, is, you know, that's a chance to put on an Irish jersey, which I'm absolutely not taking away from county by all means. I'm sure that's a privilege in the GA world, but there is that opportunity to represent nationally.
So for you going into sevens and then transferring to 15s eventually, did you see sevens as your pathway that you were going to stick with, or what was your feeling going into the sevens program in the first place?
I was very young. I think I was 15 or I was 15 when I first got picked up by Sevens. It was there was an open trial, I believe, because it had finally gotten to be an Olympic sport. They knew it was coming, so they were putting in the Olympic funding. I got picked up when I was 15. We used to do a summer and then have two tournaments at the end of it.
Okay. Would that have been a school's representative?
That was like? The school's games, I think, was Manchester my first year, maybe. But yeah, there was a school's game representative, and then there was also a Euros, I think. Around that time. And that they were the two tournaments you could go to, but you had to be 17 to go to the Euros and you had to be 16 to go to school's games. I was too young for both those the first year. But just training in that environment was interesting to me because we went in for full weekend camps, which as a young person is very alien. You don't know what to bring. You know, it's a very unusual thing because I suppose your sport is usually you show up on a Sunday and you go home. But these were actually, you could tell there was professionalism there from a young age. I definitely would say 15, 16, 17-year-old me thought I was going to stay in Sevens.
Yep.
I still loved 15s. I still went and played club for the rest of the year when Sevens wasn't on. But yeah, as it transpired, I probably just wasn't good enough at Sevens, to be honest with you. I've reflected on that a lot, and it gave me skills that I've transferred into 15 that I'm very thankful for. My pass wouldn't have been as good, I think, without Sevens. You know,
yeah, that's is it a mix of kind of pass, maybe finding space? What are the skills you can transfer then?
Yeah, I mean, the out-and-out fitness of the girls is one thing. I don't think I've ever, you know, that fitness that it takes, it definitely brings resilience as well. At the end of 14 minutes, I don't think there's anybody who's sitting up laughing or, you know, not blown sucking air. Like, you're just, you are given everything. The out-and-out fitness, the pass, I do feel your passing skills. And at the time, the girls who were in that team were balancing having full-time jobs, but trying to get skill sessions in. And we actually spoke to Ali Miller and Nora not too long ago about, they were doing 6 a.m., 5 a.m. sessions, trying to fit it all in. So, you know, at the time, Sevens, I suppose, allowed you to do that as your day job. So girls were definitely still picking up work outside of it, you know, trying to keep financials coming in and everything. But I think it did just allow you that chance to actually develop your skills. Tackle, 1v1 tackle as well. I think there's so much space on a Sevens pitch. You have to be able to own that. I don't know that that was something that I definitely transferred. It's still a work on. But I think they're probably the things, is you're a lot more exposed on a Sevens pitch maybe than you are in 15s.
Yeah, because like when I watch Anton Dupont at the moment, and I've had to watch the last few weeks because he's on the pitch.
Yeah,
it's amazing how easily he's transferred over.
I would like to think that he's a very special man. You know, he's interesting. I actually saw stats. I think he's been involved in some crazy amount of percentage of tries, try assists, or the try itself. I do feel he's a very special individual in how he does it, but fair play to him. Like, I mean, I don't know if I could transition back now if I had to. I mean, if I see social Sevens coming down the line, I'm like, oh God. Like, you know, and I actually quite like the fitness element of everything and pushing yourself that way. But it's a tough game. Like, it's not for the faint-hearted, for sure.
How have the camps been getting ready for the Six Nations then? Because I met up with the group and chatted to the players last week, and like, everyone seems nice and relaxed and everyone seems to be enjoying each other's company. It's a happy camp at the moment, but very much a focus on the work that's required for the bit of fine tuning for these games over the next month.
Yeah, for sure. I think a big thing is training ID for the group. Scott's brought in a training ID that has been very helpful. I think we know what days we're doing what. We have a set plan for that day. The session looks similar. There may be tweaks, but it gives you you know which days you're doing what and you know what the focus is for that day. So I think that's been helpful to align us. Definitely a happy camp. Definitely a happy camp. I would fully agree with that. Very good connections amongst the squad, which I'm excited to see that we can bring that on pitch as well. I feel the more you're connected off the pitch and the more you know about each other's lives and, you know, what drives people, what brings people onto the pitch, their why. It's a huge thing we've done a lot of work on. I know somebody touched on, Dorothy might have touched on the squad buddies with you. That's a huge part of it. And I want to see that we can bring that connection on pitch. That I think that would be the aim for a lot of the squad, is to hopefully inspire. You know, we're very thankful for the group that we have behind us, our support that we have behind us and everything. I think we want to be able to give the performances to back up.
Because you have to be able to build that. Because the last couple of years have been tricky. You said at the very start, like, to end up in a wooden spoon position for the first time in two decades, to miss out in qualification for the last World Cup. Yep. These are all kind of blows and bits of adversity that you have to bounce back as a group from.
Yeah. for sure. I think if anything, I'm hesitant to speak back that far because I wasn't involved.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't speak for a team that I wasn't involved in.
But even last year, like
some tough losses. I can certainly speak for that. If anything, I think when you're in that position, it gives you what you don't want. Do you know? You certainly know what you want to work on, and you feel it. You don't even need to talk about it. You know where you want to go, and you know you can identify what it is that may be causing those things. And as a group, we've really come together, and with the help of Sean and Scott, we've come together and identified what we want to work on and what we want to be and what we want to be perceived as from a public sense, and actually what won't touch us in a sense either, what we know we are for each other. I think it's been a unifying, I suppose, experience, maybe would be the word. I'm hesitant to say it, but I think we're better for having gone through it, to be honest. It's hard.
Yeah. Wales a good template when you consider that they had a few difficult years? They got their contracts in place. They again seemed to have changed their culture, and the performance started to change on the pitch. And they were very good at, I think everyone accepts that England are a distance ahead of the other teams in the Northern Hemisphere right now, and that France are very, very good as well. And there's a catch up to those two. But Wales definitely upped their results against the teams who they would have considered they could beat.
Yeah, for sure. I think that Welsh team that came out last year for the Six Nations definitely was a very well prepared side, which, I mean, again, I hadn't faced them before, so I can't really speak. But on pitch, they felt very unified. They knew their goal. They knew what they were going to do. They were very aligned in what their aim was on pitch. They had clearly done their analysis, and they knew what they wanted to target, and they did it. They stuck to their game model. It's been interesting. I chatted to one or two of the players after that game, and just about what their training week looks like and everything. They spoke to, I suppose, the contracts and what it's allowed them to do. And then they have the Prem. Obviously, a lot of them play together through the Prem, and they have different combinations and everything. But I think they're definitely a good model to see what it can be and how quickly it can change.
Yeah. Did you come away from that chat and think they're doing something entirely different to what we're doing?
Not necessarily. I just think it'd be naive to go into anything assuming that a team environment is alike. Do you know? So I was nearly just wondering, what do you get up to? Do you know, what is your... Just to see what it was. I mean, if you can ask and you can gain an advantage, why not? And they're pretty open, in fairness. I don't think there was no big secret. They were just training a lot together, and inevitably that's going to be giving you a sense of cohesion and everything. But they're a lovely group of players as well. I actually quite enjoy playing them. Nice people off the pitch as well. So yeah, I think they're a good template to go off.
Next few weeks you can look forward to going to Le Mans this current weekend. 20,000 or so going to be in for that. Twickenham to come as well.
Yeah.
Difficult game, but nice to get
You have to love them. Yeah, you have to love them, though. I don't think, you know, you get in front of, as Scott said yesterday, that they'll have two flags and a hooter each of them. But, you know, like, that's something that, if that doesn't get you up out of bed in the morning and, you know, give you a bit of motivation to get out in front of people like that and put on a performance, and I don't know what does. You know, they're the big ones. That's where hopefully the game goes eventually, is all the games are that. And I think Irish support is definitely heading in that direction.
Yep.
We've a very good fan base, and I like that we are allowing it to go up to Belfast, Dublin, Cork, give people a central hub that they can hopefully get to if they can't make it further afield. But yeah.
Would your hope someday be to play at the Aviva?
Yeah, I think we're very aligned as a squad on what that would look like. We want to probably be in a position where we're filling the stadiums that we're in at the moment and bring a good crowd to the Aviva, rather than being in the Aviva and maybe having it not as full as what we'd like.
Feels a bit like the debate with the women's soccer team, whereby their performances had to get to a level, get to a World Cup, and then that game at the Aviva could happen then.
Yeah, exactly. I'd be hesitant to call it earning it. You know, it's not. I don't think it's that. I think it's just when we're there, we want it to be, you know, we want it to be we're there and we're felt. I think the natural acoustics of those stadiums, you know, you need a decent crowd of people in to feel it. When I played in Welford Road, that was probably the first time I had experienced that level of, ooh.
Yeah.
Like, they're here.
Factor, yeah.
Yeah. You hear it on television, you know, that when somebody gets on a ball and makes a break, you hear that increase in noise. It's funny, I definitely zoned it out at the time, but watching it back, you realise that, geez, you're just in the middle of that. Like, you're it can be. It can be. Welford Road, particularly, I've heard, is quite consuming as a stadium to be in. But those fixtures, they're the ones you want. Because the more you get used to them, the more you're able to perform in them, and it can be put aside. It's not a thing. I'm definitely excited for some of the girls who will see it for the first time, because Welford Road was pretty amazing for me for first cap. Performance wasn't what we wanted. Result wasn't what we wanted. But when I separate that off from the atmosphere and what women's rugby, I think Emily Scarrett got her 100 cap that day. Wow. She had that stadium in her hand. Like they were all switched on for her and cheering her. And I don't know, I think that it's a celebration of women's rugby when you separate off what happened that day for us.
You'll forgive me for finishing with the nonsense question at the end.
Go on.
The name Scuffle, I presume you get this all the time.
Yeah.
Unique. Where does it come from?
Yeah, so it's an odd one. I actually, so we have a historian, I think, second cousin maybe of mine, maybe even more distant. And I reached out to her on Facebook. If there's a scuffle, I'm probably related to them. That's fair to say, it's that small. We don't know, is the answer. There's a suspicion that it may be a town in France, which is a Scoville. So we're wondering, is it a takeoff from that? And then if not, there's another link to Bavarian region in Germany, but we can't figure it out. So if there's anybody, if there's anybody that knows, I would love to know, because I do get the question all the time, but yeah. I actually don't know.
So I'm presuming your ancestors are here quite some time then. This isn't just a couple of generations back.
Yeah. So I think there's England, there's an Albert and William, I think, that you can trace it as far as I've been able to figure out. There's an Albert and William who were brothers. And that's as far as I think we can get. So I believe they were English, and I believe that was late 1800s. But after that, I don't know. I wish I knew. That's my mum's side of the family. So it's interesting. I don't know. Mm. I'd love to know.
The search goes on. You might get on to the next series of Who Do You Think You Are, I think is the name of that.
I would be so open to that. Do you know what my favourite one of that is? Judi Dench. Did you see it?
No, go on.
So she found out that she was related to, I don't want to get this wrong now, but she found out that she was related to somebody who was involved in the production of, was it Hamlet?
Oh, wow.
Was her original, wasn't that her role? She had a role in one of the, yeah. So she found out that
one of
she
the
was,
ultimate Shakespearean actors.
Yeah. So she found out she was actually related to somebody who was involved in the early stages of that, which was just mind-blowing. And she also had a third cousin maybe, or a second cousin, who was an actor in maybe the Netherlands. Don't quote me again. But that's my favourite episode of that, in the sense of, she found out that she had gone on generations to honour something that actually her family had done. Cool story.
Written in the stars. Well, look, Molly, thanks a million for coming in, and the best of luck with the start against France in Le Mans this weekend.
Thank you very much.